Have appearances of counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. John Nurse and Shane Price appearing for the plaintiffs of the appellate.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thomas N. Ryan of the law firm Blatty Court and Ryan on behalf of the respondent, Township of Sparta.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Urson, please go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justice, Mr. Ryan, may it please the Court. We're here today talking about municipalities' power to assess in the same general format as taxation, private property through lake associations, with the specific issue being the Dam Restoration Act. In thinking about the case, I think the reality is that the legal issue presented to Your Honors this morning is really very well illustrated by the fact pattern developed by this case. Just a very brief amount of background that is certainly in the briefs, but this scenario really developed following 2000. Following in the year of 2000, there was a number of dramatic weather events. Thereafter, the DEP began a very heightened scrutiny, regulation, and direction to dam owners and lake owners all across the state. The legislature recognized this in 2003. The legislature adopted the Dam, Lake, Stream, Flood Control, Water Resources, and Wastewater Treatment Project Bond Act of 2003. Reading through the legislative history of that, we see that from the very beginning, there was $150 million allocated towards dam issues and dam repair and restoration, and $95 million of that was to be allocated specifically through a program where the owners of dams would pair with local governments, where the local governments would become co-borrowers, and the municipalities would use the power of special assessment in order to collect the payments to be made against the loan. There are certainly many examples across the state where the lake communities and interested parties in a dam have clearly defined associations and membership. This is not one of them. In the scenarios where the lake association is clearly defined, I think this project, the process that was outlined by the legislature, probably went fairly smoothly. The association defined the project. They applied to the town. The town became the co-applicant, and then the town uses the power of assessment to collect the money that will then become the payments against the loan. I suggest to this court that this case illustrates what happens when a number of things go wrong. One of the things that happened in this case that deserves scrutiny is that there were a number of conflicts between the municipality's governing body and this lake association, including the situation where a mayor and council person was in the association itself. The case that is now presented to this court was defined by private action behind closed doors many decades ago that has now informed the township's approach to this case that I'll speak more about in a second. And the last thing is that the directions and restraints of the statutes involved were frankly simply ignored in favor of expediency. This case, I think, has many public policy implications, but I will very shortly argue that there is a very narrow and clear point that this court should focus on and rule upon. But I think as a public policy matter, certainly the dams that haven't been addressed and repaired are getting older. Weather is getting more extreme. And many projects, probably the ones that were more straightforward to tackle, have been done, but many more remain, and this issue is going to come up. And before I begin to speak more specifically about the legal issues in this case, the one thing that I would want to point out to the court is in the statute is this case is about dam repair, which is obviously a public safety issue, but in the statute it also provides for lake dredging and other aesthetic matters so that those matters could go to recreation and the appearance of a lake rather than things that would be of public safety to the surrounding community. The legal issue narrowly defined for this court that we're asking the court to address and rule upon is the fact that the legislature did not leave any ambiguity in defining how municipalities should assess properties in order to recoup the funds to make the loan payments. The statute, NJSA 58:4-12D, specifically references the special assessment statute, which is NJSA 40:5627, and both statutes contain the language, similar language. When the legislature passed the Bond Act in 2003, it specifically said that municipalities should collect the special assessments assessed in the same manner generally as the special assessment statute. But there's three key elements in both of the statutes. The properties benefited are to be included in the assessment. The assessment is to be not in excess of and not in excess of, I'm sorry, in proportion to and not in excess of the benefits conferred. There are three fair market value elements to that. The first fair market value is the properties benefited has to be a fair market value determination, not in excess to.
Has to be a fair market value determination?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where do you get that from?
I get that from the court's decision in McNally versus Teaneck. In McNally versus Teaneck, there was specific analysis on it, which is a little bit different than what we have here, where the court was examining a per foot frontage method and determining whether or not it would be legal in the constraints of the statute. And in that case, the court specifically said that if the analysis produced evidence of an incremental increase in value, which is typically measured by an increase in the value of the property, then it would meet the restrictions of the statute.
Tell us what you think went wrong in the assessment that Sparta did.
Certainly. In this case,
when I say Sparta, I'm meaning its expert.
So I don't think anything went wrong with its expert. I think what happened in this case is that the municipality in some ways missed its obligation to determine the properties included. So in the record, interestingly, is Mr. Holzhauer, the appraisal expert for the municipality. His first proposal sets forth very specifically that he intended to do a paired analysis, a paired appraisal analysis, where he would determine what the value of a home was with no lake and what the value of the home would be with the lake with the dam repair.
So I know that's what he proposed to do. That's not what he did do. So tell us what was wrong with his methodology.
So he deviated from his own proposed methodology to simply accepting the boundaries of the assessment area as defined by the Glen Lake Beach Club. And so when you read his final report actually, instead of starting with the analysis of incremental value and determining which property should be included, he began to refer to terms like within the boundaries of...
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
I mean, that defined the class of homes within this community that, at least on a contingent basis, had the ability to seek membership and access to that lake. Why is that future potential benefit not exactly the kind of benefit that this court should recognize under the statute?
I think, Judge, I'm going to quickly retreat to Judge Minkowitz's analysis, and the reason is that it wasn't done by the government, first of all, okay? And because it wasn't done by the government, it wasn't done in the light of an incremental value and having a specific benefit. The defined benefit
is... I don't understand how that answers the question.
So there's nothing in the record, not one piece of evidence, that says that if a person has the right to join a beach club, their market value of their house goes up. Not one piece of evidence.
You don't think that's a common sense interpretation?
I do not.
Why?
Because in the Township of Sparta, the Township of Sparta is a community of approximately 15,000 people. The Township of Sparta has a YMCA located in the neighboring town. It has a municipal lake with a beach club. You could make the same argument that driving 11 minutes to a YMCA increases the value of the property.
Well,
the
So what you're saying is a different issue. Just like I said, it's not that the 58 homes that have access to the beach club is a crazy notion, because one could, on a common sense basis, mm-hmm. understand that that will probably increase the value of the property. I think your issue is, well, by how much? How do we know? Isn't that your issue?
Yes, and I would argue the first dollar, okay? So I would argue that we could get bogged down in this case about proportionality and excess, but I don't even think we get there.
What if you had a situation? You go ahead.
Would the analysis include that, as I understand it, even though you were able to join the beach club by where your location, you may not be admitted, even though you had every availability of it? Would that affect the? Should that be included into the analysis?
Certainly. And now, if Mr. Holzhauer had taken the time to analyze what percentage of people joined, showing that it had value, or determining that perhaps they had offered membership to 500 homes, but only 60 joined on a regular basis. If any of that analysis had been in there, that would have been helpful. If Mr. Holzhauer's analysis...
How would somebody voluntarily choosing to join affect the value? If you choose not to join, that's a personal determination, but that shouldn't have... How do you decide that that affects the value of the property?
For the reviewing court would want to know whether 20% of the available homes joined, 50% joined, or 90%.
But how is that
relevant?
Why isn't it sufficient that that's a selling feature when that house goes on the market in the future to be able to say it's eligible to apply for membership?
It's an excellent question, I apologize, because what I haven't given in any answers to the questions that the justices have been asking is the fact that there is no right in the deeds to these properties to join the beach club. This was a private meeting in the early 80s where the Glen Lake Beach Club went in their clubhouse with their governing body, and they drew a map and they drew a circle and they said these properties can join. There's nothing. So if I'm one of the plaintiff's properties, which are some distance from the beach club across the major road, there's nothing to stop the Glen Lake Beach Club from going into session tomorrow and deciding that only 30 homes could join or 500 homes.
But there's history. The reality is there is history, and I know that there's one plaintiff who says that she tried to join and wasn't allowed to, but let's leave for the moment that aside. If there's been a practice over many years of allowing people within this perimeter, which, you know, as you say, was privately created, to join, and presumably if person A sells to person B, they're in the perimeter, so we can expect them to join. I understand that being in the deed would give it more security if it were somehow written in a more definitive way. However, why is that not, if you're talking about first dollar being all you need here, why is that not on balance a common sense valuable selling feature, as Slovakia put it?
Because I think that the lack of the deed restriction and the ability of the beach club to change the boundaries, even accepting the point that you make, that they have not changed it over the last number of years. If a seller were to advertise that you have the right to join the beach club and it were to change 3 years from now, I actually would argue that seller would have liability for a misrepresentation.
I don't know why you're not arguing, okay, let's take the 58 homes, that the designation of one for the outside, 1.5 for closer, and the two was just arbitrary figures without any sort of market value assessment. Like, why aren't you arguing that?
I thought that the properties benefited was the stronger point, because it's the starting point to determining that, but I absolutely 100% agree with that argument and would be happy to make it at further length, because, again, the assessor's report does not give any mathematical formulas, any evidence, any comparisons that would give a reviewing court the ability to measure proportionality or excess benefit.
Can I ask you a question about that that exquisite dollar analysis that you're suggesting is required here? Do you think that level of review was exercised in the Ridgewood Country Club case, where proximity to the new sewers that were going in, and this was a country club that already had sewers, was sufficient to recognize a benefit in that situation?
So if I recall correctly, in that case, I think the court's decision implied that there was sufficient evidence in the record to find a benefit, but it was remanded for further determination on net versus gross benefit.
But the point was, I mean, I'm not sure that there was the level of exactitude that you're suggesting is required for this category to be even included.
That may be, but my recollection of that case is that there were sufficient mathematical formulas presented so that the court began to host the arguments of net versus gross benefit. What were the offsets? What were the dollar amounts frontage?
Tell me if I'm mistaken. That assessment was on the country club, correct?
Correct.
So if we were making a comparison from Woodbridge to this beach club, you would be doing the assessment on the beach club and having the members pay the increased value of the assessment against the beach club, which is a corporation, correct?
The beach club is a corporation, correct.
So one manner of valuation would have been the entire assessment goes on the land of the beach club, and everyone who happens to be a member of the beach club just pays an increased amount.
Well, in fact, when you track back through the record...
That would be... No. Basically what happened in Ridgewood, the country club got stuck with the assessment, and I guess every member of the country club
the point was whether the property was even assessable.
Correct.
Yeah.
But just touching on that question for 1 second, that is what happened here and then was quickly abandoned. The original loan application specifically indicated, the first application that went to DEP, indicated that this was going to be an association assessment. That the town was
but they're not a property owner. As I read the statutes, it's all about the property owners that pay the assessments, not an amalgamation or association of property owners who they don't collectively own it. The club in this case does not own any property. Am I correct?
Correct.
So you would not. That was never an option to be able to assess the club because it's not a property owner.
Correct, but in the original loan application, you can propose that the town is going to use its power of assessment or that the association itself, through its members, was going to collect the dues and then pay it to the town, who would pay it to the DEP.
Right, but to me, the issue with the distinction between Ridgewood Country Club and this is Ridgewood Country Club actually owned the land.
Correct.
I thought the beach club was incorporated.
I believe the beach club is incorporated, yes.
But it doesn't own the land.
So under its incorporation, does the beach club as a corporation own the land or no?
I believe that the beach club owns a very small amount of land on the shore where its actual clubhouse is. I believe that's all it owns.
There's probably an easement.
Yeah.
The consultant's report makes at least two findings. With respect to benefit, it says you have an advantage for membership and also that there's the potential for liability for these homeowners. Do you dispute the second finding as well as the first?
Yes.
Explain, please.
Well, the appellate division began to focus on net opinion and then respectfully, I think, missed the argument that I'm making here. But with respect to the liability, it also doesn't give a proper analysis of what that liability would be. And again, that's not a central point in my argument, but I think that the expert's opinion with respect to the liability would be a net opinion. No evidence, no foundation.
Would it be a rational basis for Sparta to accept that a dam that bursts would create liability for the neighboring properties?
Yes, And if that was done and there was a proper foundation and analysis in the report, we might have a different conversation because the properties assessed here would have been different. It's not part of the record, but Glen Lake empties into a stream and it goes somewhere else, and I don't think anyone would have made the argument that these properties would have been in that proximity.
So there's no flood, you know, obviously in the beach cases, in terms of the beach replenishment cases, all of the area properties are potentially exposed to the risk of flood.
Sure, I think that's easier to analyze in a shore scenario than it is here, and it goes right back to the Chief Justice's point that if the analysis had been, here's the topography, here's where the water flows, here's the properties affected, and that's how we're going to draw the map. We're going to include those in because this house should contribute so the dam is safe so it doesn't get flooded.
You said in the beginning of your arguments you referred to some other lake organizations have a different situation. Let's assume here that if you live in the two or three houses within the lake or within a particular perimeter, you were automatically in the club. You had to pay fees for maintenance. You had the access to the lake. You were in. And let's leave aside the special membership issue that exists in this case. And if an expert, excuse me, then said, well, these 55 houses are in this club, and therefore they have access, and therefore that's the assessment. Without going into a fair market value analysis, would that be sufficient?
Yes. And I think the contrasting example is Sparta is a very nice town, and in Sparta, the Lake Mohawk Country Club occupies perhaps a third of the town. I think it's the second largest homeowners association in the state. Very clearly defined reservation limits, very clearly defined deed restrictions. When you join at closing, you pay $3,000 to join it. It's absolutely crystal clear that you've joined. Yeah. You have vested rights of membership, and there's no question that that would be a benefit and that the analysis could move quickly past properties benefited and move to...
So you could... A town could get by with that expert's report without actually going the next step and saying, here's the fair market value without the improvement, here's the fair market value with the improvement.
I think in that case, the expert's testimony could be very summary because I think you could find 7,000 properties that sold for X percentage more versus town versus lots that are three lots away from the deed.
But the expert would still have to go through some level of fair market value analysis.
Correct, but I think he would have a very firm foundation in the respect that the vested rights of deeded membership in that association would clear the pathway to an expedited conclusion, frankly.
I'm still having trouble accepting the argument that fair market value is necessary in the apportionment of the benefit of something like this, which is a safety, essentially disaster precautionary measure that's being taken. Why the insistence on tying the amount of benefit to be shared for the cost of that protection being tied to fair market value?
Because I think it's the fundamental protection for the surrounding property owners. Because in this case, assuming numbers which I believe to be about correct, there's about 35 owners of the proper, 35 members of the beach club. Roughly 10 or 11 are lakefront, another 20 have views, and the association is made up that way. The protection that comes from requiring a incremental fair market value basis of benefit to be shown protects the homeowners on the outer ring from being assessed to projects with which they have no benefit.
Well, that makes sense if you know, with your analogy before to a topography analysis of if the dam broke, what properties would be damaged by that disaster. But outside of that setting, I'm having trouble connecting a required rational basis to fair market value increase or decrease tied to, you know, views of the lake and so forth, the sort of things you would otherwise think about for a fair market value assessment for tax purposes, which is different.
What I would suggest to Your Honor is that the wording is in the statute as the protection for the incremental spread of the ring. If you think about this case in particular, I've asked the lower courts, and I've mentioned this court, you had a council person who one time was mayor who lived in this development. You have to have a fundamental safeguard to protect the 35 users of the lake from saying there should be 60, or there should be 70, or there should be 80. If you went to my client's property and you said, where is it in the statute or in directions in our law that protect my client's home from being assessed to something they have no benefit, maybe you would conclude that my client's property has a benefit.
But they had incremental, your clients, as I understand it, paid about half of what the top level was with respect to the assessment, right?
Correct.
Or exactly half.
Correct.
So they were recognizing that somebody who is further from the lake is getting less of a benefit than someone who's right by the lake.
Correct.
But the people who live in the reserve do not have a right to use the lake unless they're members of the club.
Correct.
Do all the properties, all 58, have a view of the lake?
No. Not even close.
Does that affect the methodology?
I think what it does is it shines a light on the glaring deficiency in the methodology. So in the methodology, if you determined that you were lakefront, I don't have to spend time on that. If you determined that you were Lakeview, there might be a distinction there. But properties that are across the street, properties that are the 60th and 65th house, there has to be something in the law, and I think there is in the statute, and as this court has previously interpreted it, that protects the outer rings from being included just for the benefit of spreading the cost.
How many properties don't have a view of the lake? Sorry.
How
many properties do not have a
about
view
half
of the lake?
Of about 40% of the assessment area.
I take it your argument is there has to be some rational valuation, and what's difficult to know, or it's impossible to know from the expert's report, is whether or not the Lakeview people got four times the benefit, the Lake Access people maybe two times, and maybe your client 0.05%. We just don't know.
Right.
Because there was no valuation at all other than 1.5 and 2.0.
Correct. We presented evidence at the trial court, but of course the trial court never got to the full analysis because the trial court stopped by rejecting the expert's opinion. But in a revaluation is a mass evaluation where the whole town is evaluated. There's a method called linear regression that's used where they subtract out the cost of the improvements and try and get down to a land value. And when they get down to a land value, they group it by different neighborhoods because the neighborhood might be up on top of a mountain and have beautiful views, or might be lakefront. And we presented that evidence to the trial court that the area that was done by Sparta Township's own assessment had the confines of the lake community, meaning that had a site value benefited by the lake, far smaller than the assessment area.
Do you, in your presentation to the trial court, what was your approach in terms of what deference, if any, should be allowed to the council and its determination to rely on its expert's report?
So I think that, again, going back to the McNally versus Teaneck decision, in that decision, there's a section in the end that does talk about some deference given to the municipalities, provided that the incremental value can be demonstrated with a reasonable basis. Because in that case, they were talking about the front foot argument and then how that would translate into fair market value. And this court in that decision clearly signaled that the township gets some deference. But what can't happen is that the township, instead of determining which properties be included, it simply decides not to decide and uses the map drawn up by the Glen Lake Beach Club in the 1980s. That's what can't happen. I think that if the township had employed an analysis, a mathematical analysis, an incremental value that incorporated some elements of fair market value, I think the township would be entitled to some deference. But here, they made no... I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, please finish your sentence.
I think here, They simply abdicated that, and their expert, it's very interesting when you read his report, because almost instantly in his report, he starts citing within the Glen Lake Beach Club boundaries, within the reservation. He uses the words within the assessment area in his report. His report was supposed to determine what the assessment area was, and the beginning of his report starts analyzing the houses in terms of within the assessment area. I'm sorry, Chief Justice.
We're at the half-hour mark right now, and I just wanted to ask you a quick question about the conflict argument. Is it properly before the court? I don't recall the appellate division discussing conflict, and I don't remember that there was a cross-appeal in this case.
So what I would say, to not distract from what I believe is the stronger points, is I would argue, I would include it in my argument because I think that it that the decision-making process and the process followed by the township deserves heightened scrutiny when a member of the governing body has made himself involved in the process, which in the end benefits himself by expanding the assessment area. So I would argue, to answer your question directly, not an appealable point.
All right. Anything else you'd like to add?
I have one question.
Please, Chief.
Title 58 doesn't specifically talk about fair market value in determining benefit, correct?
Correct. It says properties benefited.
But it does refer to Title 40. And in Title 40, which is the general assessment statute, it does talk about fair market value in determining benefit.
Correct.
How do the two interrelate? In other words, is 58 subsuming 40? Is it inclusive of 40? Does SPARTA talk about that? I mean, how do they interrelate?
What I would suggest is that when the Cobar or dam loan arrangement was made in 58, it specifically references Title 40, directing that the same process be followed. But then I think what is important in trying to figure out how they relate is they go on to use virtually all of the same wording. I think the properties benefited in proportion to and not in excess of the benefit conferred.
Are you suggesting that by incorporating or making reference to Title 40, that the requirements of Title 40, that value be part of the benefit assessment, is also part of 58?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, Chief Justice, Associate Justices, Mr. Urson, may it please the Court. Yes, this is ultimately about a private dam. It involves, more specifically, a dispute over a special assessment the Township of SPARTA levied on 58 properties for the cost to repay a loan obtained by Glen Lake Beach Club to finance a state-mandated rehabilitation of their privately owned dam. The role of SPARTA Township was to act as the means required by the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection to assess and collect the monies required to pay the loan provided by the NJDEP to Glen Lake in order for Glen Lake to make the state-mandated repairs to this dam. Plaintiffs allege the township's ultimate decision in the form of Resolution 6-1 was arbitrary and capricious. It is not. In order to fulfill the role, the township engaged in a very deliberate and a very reasonable and a very responsible process. The township created a special assessment commission, a commission that was established with a responsibility beyond just Glen Lake, but to address multiple assessment circumstances that could arise within SPARTA Township. As Mr. Urson indicated, SPARTA Township is a community that has a number of private lake communities, and therefore this was not a novel issue for SPARTA Township, although each community has unique characteristics. In addition to establishing the assessment commission, The township also hired an experienced consultant to assist in determining the allocation of the special assessment, and that, of course, was Mr. Holzhauer. The commission and the township council held numerous properly noticed, publicly attended meetings to discuss the special assessment. And after reviewing a comprehensive record that included the report of the consultant, the recommendation of the assessment commission, and input from the public, the township levied the special assessment via Resolution 6-1, assessing the 58 properties. The dispute with regard to the township's action lies in the properties that were assessed and the authority to make that assessment. We have four relatively straightforward points that we emphasized in our pleadings. Number one, the township is not required to assess properties using the public improvement standards. A very important distinction must be made between an assessment that is for a public purpose and an assessment that is for a private purpose. There was much discussion with regard to that, both at the trial level as well as here this morning. And in that instance, you have, in a public assessment, you have a number that can be distributed with a fair market value approach, but it will not necessarily cover the entire amount of the assessment. And that responsibility is then left to the municipality. Here, when you're dealing with a private assessment, the municipality cannot expend public funds for that private benefit. Therefore, when you look at methodology and assessing for a private benefit, you start with an actual number that must be distributed amongst all the properties that benefited. And here, the benefit, as has been touched upon, is the eligibility for membership in the Glen Lake Beach Club. Number two, the township's decision to include the 58 properties is entitled to a presumption of correctness. And I would submit to the court that indeed the action taken by Sparta Township was not arbitrary. It was not capricious. It engaged in a careful and thoughtful process in coming up with the assessment and its implementation. The Holzhauer report is not a net opinion. The appellate division gave a very reasonable and studied analysis of that argument, which was made by the plaintiffs in this action. It was not net opinion in the sense that there was indeed a methodology and there was a factual basis. The appellate division also made clear that dealing with a determination of net opinion in a judicial proceeding, in a court, is very different when applying the characteristics of net opinion to a circumstance that involves something more akin to an administrative proceeding.
Counsel,
yes.
If you were not a member of the beach club, you could not use the lake or the beach. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And even though you were in the area of the beach club, unless the membership allowed you in under their whatever criteria they had, there was no right to be a member and use the beach club. Is that correct?
Yes, you would have to exercise your right to membership.
Isn't the benefit somewhat illusory at best? If you can't use it, may not be able to get in no matter what. What is the benefit that derives from that?
The property itself, by having the benefit of eligibility for membership.
So the benefit is the potential eligibility. Is that the benefit? The potential eligibility to perhaps someday be allowed to use the lake and the beach club?
Yeah, you are, under the bylaws, you have eligibility.
I understand the bylaws. I read them.
Yes.
Is that the benefit?
Yes, that's the
potential
benefit.
Eligibility someday for perhaps membership. Be allowed to join?
Yes.
Can you focus with us, because this is a key premise of the Holzhauer report as I read it. He says, at page 7 of the report, the peculiar benefit or advantage is that a property owner in the club, quote, has the, quote, right to become a member. Does the record support that? Is membership automatic if you own one of these properties, or can it be denied?
I don't believe that there's anything in the record that suggests that it can be denied.
Is that what in the record supports the pillar of his analysis as I see it, that simply by owning property in the reserve, you have the right to be a member?
It would go to the bylaws and the amendments to the bylaws that date back to, I believe it was 1979.
So would you
that identified the perimeters of the properties that were included in the Glen Lake Beach Club?
Would you agree then that if someone applied for membership and was denied, they would not be getting a peculiar benefit?
Yes, they would. Well, let me step back. My argument is that being eligible for membership is a value. There's a value to that.
So I'm questioning whether that is in fact correct, that you have the automatic right by being a property owner to ascend to membership.
I have to answer that yes, you do, because there's nothing in the record to suggest otherwise.
So help us with the woman who spoke at the council meeting and said, I've lived there for 34 years. This is in the record of the minutes. I tried to join the beach club, and I was denied because they weren't taking any new members. Did the council resolve that because it's at odds with the core principle in the Holzhauer report?
Well, and unfortunately, that argument was only raised in the application, the petition for certification to the Supreme Court. It was not raised in the trial court, nor was it raised with the appellate division.
Was it raised? Did the town resolve it? The town heard this information that was presented before it adopted the resolution. Did it resolve the dispute that exists here?
No, it did not resolve the what was raised in the public session of that meeting, to my knowledge.
So does that undermine the presumption of validity that is accorded a resolution?
The problem is for this court to rely upon that statement, which really is hearsay upon hearsay, that was never a part of the record in the trial court, nor the record that was submitted to the appellate
counsel. How is that hearsay upon hearsay? The woman who was denied made the statement at a public hearing, and so it's part of that record. At the very least, it's under 803C6, is the business record exception to the hearsay rule, but beyond that, it was her own statement.
Well, my difficulty is that, again, it was not brought up in the evidentiary stage of this litigation. It was not raised in the trial court. It was never addressed in the trial court.
It's your argument that the benefit conferred is an increase in the property value if the dam is fixed and the lake is beautiful and everything is sunny. Is that your argument?
That being eligible for membership, yes.
Okay.
Being eligible for membership in that Glen Lake Beach Club.
I want to point you to your appendix, 109, and it's the Holzhauer letter to the tax assessor, which he begins by saying, as per your request, I am submitting the following proposal to perform real estate appraisal. Then it goes on. And then he says, in order to conduct this appraisal assignment in accordance with the statute, two values will be determined for each affected property in the project area. And then it has the market value without consideration of the special improvement, dam rehabilitation, and the second is the market value with the special improvement in place. So that's what he submitted. That's apparently what he was suggesting he was going to do, correct?
That was his preliminary proposal,
yeah,
correct.
But that's not what he did, correct?
That's correct. That is not what he did.
Instead, he put some arbitrary value on the rear-end properties and gave them this 0.10 benefit, and then the closer you got 2.0. But I'm trying to figure out, what's that based on? Other than the fact that he's just putting this marker down for these properties, how did he get there? Where is the underlying information, assessment, evaluation?
he articulates it himself very, very simply. Now, again, we start with what's the total cost of the loan repayment. And that's the number that we start with. And that number has to be divided up amongst these individual properties.
I understand that. And I'm accepting the 58. What I'm trying to understand is how he calculated the division, other than saying the one furthest from the lake will pay $13,000, and the ones with the lake view are $26,000. Like, where does he come up with that?
Well,
I would understand it if there was some sort of assessment of the property, the increased value of the property, then it would make sense. But it doesn't seem like any of that was done. As he initially proposed he was going to do.
And he, in taking a look at Title 40 versus Title 58, again, I go back to the distinction that must be drawn between an assessment for a public purpose and assessment for a private purpose.
Let me ask you about that. I was about to ask you about that. Do you dispute that under Title 40, an assessment for a public purpose must involve a fair market value of analysis?
I do not dispute that.
So what does it mean when the legislature said in 58.412(d)(1) that the cost of payment, et cetera, shall be assessed in the same manner as provided for the assessment of local improvements generally under Chapter 56 of Title 40, the revised statutes, against the real estate benefited thereby in proportion to, et cetera? What does that legislative statement mean? And I just bear in mind, you know, we are often asked to
sure.
infer a legislative intent to import one statute into another. We have here legislative language that does that.
Well, I believe that one of the crux words in that statement is generally applied.
Generally under Chapter 56, but it says in the same manner as provided for the assessment of local improvements generally under Chapter 56. And as far as I can tell, correct me if I'm wrong, the only thing you can find, the only legislative language you can find in Chapter 56 and Title 40 with respect to the assessment of local improvements is that fair market value analysis that's in the statute that we just talked about, right?
Yes.
Okay, so if the only thing we can find in all of Chapter 56 of Title 40 about how to assess is that fair market value, what else could they be talking about but importing the fair market value requirement into Chapter 58?
I believe Mr. Holzhauer even opined in his report, and I would argue that again, because of the constraints of a private assessment, that when a municipality is called upon to establish and collect an assessment for a private benefit, that it cannot simply be based upon fair market value. It cannot be based on fair market value.
Well, I understand the report, but is that what the legislature is saying should happen in this setting?
I would argue yes. I would argue that you read both Title 40 and Title 58 in conjunction, and the word generally is a very important and practical application.
But it says generally. It doesn't say, as the legislature sometimes does, to the extent practicable, if possible, you know, sort of optional language that the legislature sometimes gives. It says shall be assessed, and there's plenty of law saying shall means shall when the legislature says it. So why, it's not obviously our job to decide whether it's a good methodology or a bad methodology. Why shouldn't we conclude that for whatever its reasons might be, the legislature wanted the same methodology, a fair market value before and after, to apply to a private assessment as it does, no one disputes, in a public assessment?
Associate Justice, I can only respectfully, just submit that there must be a distinction. And I believe that the word generally does allow for that practical distinction between the applicability of Title 40 and a public assessment. And
so generally means if it works or if practicable?
Generally, if practicable, yes.
Can you explain, going back to the private assessment issue, I have two questions. My first is, you take a global number, annual cost of satisfying the bond obligation, divide it by the number of properties in some fashion, as the expert did.
Correct.
In other words, he backed into the number. How is that not the definition of a net opinion? He had a number, and he had to figure out how to divide it among the properties, and he backed into that number with those figures, 1, 2, 1.5. How is that not the definition of a net opinion? That's number one. And number two is, how is that private assessment any different than a public assessment in the sense that the municipality has a number and figures out the difference in fair market value and comes out with a percentage or a per penny on the rate, or they do exactly the same thing whether it's a private or public assessment. There was nothing stopping him from making the determination based on fair market value. He still could have backed into the number, still could have gotten the number.
But with an assessment for a public purpose, indeed the assessed properties may not and most often do not provide the monies to cover the entire cost of the improvement. With a private assessment or with an assessment for a private improvement, the municipality cannot expend
so
funds.
What?
The municipality comes up
so
with a
what?
Difference for a public.
So what? You have the number. You've already said he had a number.
Yes.
And he backed into this calculation. How is that any different than having the number and appropriating based on change in value a percentage and coming up with that number? How is one relies on fair market value and one is, I think, the definition of arbitrary?
Well,
how is
I would
any
argue
different?
Mr. Holzhauer did set out what his methodology was, what his factual basis was, and it was to take this share approach that in terms of the properties that were eligible, they got a designation of one share, and those that had a direct view of the lake but were across the road, they got an allocation of 1.5, and those that were waterfront got a designation
based
of 2.0.
Based on what objective criteria? I'm just trying to figure out what objective, how is it not arbitrary to pick these numbers out of thin air based upon those criteria? Maybe the benefit for the person who had no view and no access is 1/100. He could pick that number and made it much more expensive for the closer properties. What in the world is it based on? How is that not arbitrary?
Well, again, I would argue that there was a rationale to it. Rationale is based upon the access to the lake, starting from the premise of eligibility for membership and then associating some other characteristics.
So you've correctly just told us the rationale rests on the view of the lake and access to the lake. With the closer you are, the better the view, the higher the number assessment. Those in the outer ring, the ones assessed at only a 1, are some of those properties, do some of those properties have a view of the lake and others not?
No. The properties that do not have a view of the lake were assessed 1.0.
I understand that, but in the, how many properties were assessed just 1?
I'm sorry?
How many out of the 58 properties were assessed 1.0?
I don't know the exact number, but it was a multitude of properties. It wasn't just 1.
Every one of those properties has absolutely no view of the lake?
Within reason, that's my understanding. They do not have a view of the lake.
I don't understand the within reason qualifier.
Well, when the leaves are off trees, whether someone can actually from some angle in their yard see the lake, I don't know if there could be a circumstance under which someone could set their eyes on that lake.
But I want to be clear because I didn't quite see this in the report itself, where where there's a focus on view of the lake, even though that's one of the rationales for this methodology. Are you telling us that none of the properties outside of the ones across the street from the lake or the ones that were lakefront had a view of the lake?
My understanding is those that were simply assigned a 1.0 share did not have a view of the lake.
Can you point us to a spot on the record that nails that, and I'll ask you later if you need a moment.
I cannot.
I think your adversary said that there were 11 lakefront properties and 20 Lakeview. Is that who are members? Let's assume they're all members. That's 31. There are 58 properties. That would mean there are a whole bunch of properties that don't have a lake view, right?
Yes, I
do. Including the plaintiffs. We know that the plaintiffs do not have lake views.
Correct.
Anything else you'd like to present?
I have nothing further at this time. Thank you, Justices.
Thank you, Council. We'll take the matter under advisement. We're going to take a brief